It is Radio to Women, and it is about how you can get your kids into college. Now, come on, who can miss that? It's Radio to Women. Don't touch that dial. All right, we have in the studio Bill Short. He is back. This is what we are going to call an encore performance. First of all, we never have men on Radio to Women, and I don't think we've ever had a man come in twice. So, Bill, this is your lucky day.
I'm feeling luckier.
To be in the studio. Bill Short founded The Shortlist in 2001, which is a company focused on inspiring passion in young adults and helping them make the shortlist of their chosen colleges, graduate schools, or profession. He received his MBA from Harvard Business School and a BA from Villanova. He is a novice when it comes to how to get into his own shortlist. The Shortlist can be found at the website, theshortlist.org. It's a company focused on inspiring passion in young adults and helping them make the shortlist of their chosen colleges. Okay, in the first half of the show, if you missed it, you can catch it on Radio 2 Women. That's www.radio2women.com, where we talked to Bill. We really walked you through how you got here into the shortlist and how you landed with this college and career counseling. But now I want to get into the real nitty-gritty of where we started. Which is easing the stress and improving chances in college admission process. Mm-hmm. That's where I want to start now, because we just ran out of time last time.
Well, thank you for having me back, and I'm glad that we can add that part too.
Let's really seriously focus on the college admission process, because right now, here's what's happening with kids, at least from my social network, is that if you didn't want to kind of go in with, what is that, a binding contract, your applications are due now, and they're really due by what, January 1st? Is that
January 1st, that's right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So now kids are in the heat of it, right? I mean, I talked to somebody, Sienna Barnaba, well, I'm going to give her a little shout out in the grocery store yesterday. I'm like, all right, where are you applying to? Right. And so she said, she rattled off 7 or 8 schools. First of all, what do you think about that? More schools better, less schools? What do you?
I think that 7-8 number is a nice number. We always say to our clients anywhere from, say, 8 to 12.
That you actually apply to.
You apply to, yeah.
How many do they look at to get it down to 7 to 8?
Oh, you would look at more than that, because the idea is that you want to go out there just as you're, as you know, shopping for a home. You don't look at just one home and then go buy it. You know, I mean, you're fortunate if that happens. Most of the time you're looking at many homes and then you kind of narrow it down and finally you find that one that you really like, which, Serene, to your point, might be that school that you apply to early. And that passed on November 1. There are a couple of schools that will stretch that to November 15th. But really, it's November 1 is the
bulk of those. And that's binding, though.
So it can be binding. Oh. Not all of them are binding. Okay. If it's an early decision, just think of the first word early means that you're applying early. You're going to find out early. And the second word is the operative word. So decision. The decision has been made. You have to go to that school if accepted. There's also early action, which means that you're applying early, but you're just taking action. You find out at the same time the early decision folks do, but you don't have to go to that school. You have till May 1 to decide. And then they have a couple of other, you know, early deadlines that are priority deadlines or restricted early action. I mean, it can get a little bit complicated, but just think that the idea, the one that's binding that you're talking about, is early decision. And so, for most schools, that was just November 1.
What's the thinking behind all those different classes of applications and acceptances?
From the school's perspective or from the student's perspective?
From both.
You know, to be quite frank, I think that early decision for the student's perspective is you get it over sooner. You know, you get to find that one school. And there are a lot of sophisticated kids out there that have been thinking about this process for a long time. And so for them, they know, hey, if I apply early, I'll find out early. And by the holidays, the year-end holidays, I know where I'm going to school. So that's kind of the idea behind it. The problem with early decision, though, is you have very little room to negotiate or appeal, is really what it is, for financial aid. So it's a binding agreement. You have to go to that school or sit out a year. Even international students, you have to sit out an entire year. It's a binding agreement.
What does that mean? You have to sit out. Like, all right, so I apply to Georgetown early decision, and they accept me. And I decide, oh, I didn't think about this because I can't afford Georgetown.
Sorry, if they've accepted you, you have to go to that school or you sit out a year.
So I can't go anywhere else?
You can't go anywhere else. And really? And what you do is you sign it. If it's a binding agreement, now Georgetown is one of those schools that has an early action. It's a restricted early action, so it's non-binding. But you could take a school just north of them, University of Pennsylvania, a great school up in Philadelphia. If you were to apply to that school and be accepted, you'd have to go to that school. You sign that contract, your parent or guardian signs that contract, and your counselor signs that contract.
Wow.
So families will say, well, how would they ever know? I'll just say I'm not going to school, and then I'll have my counselor send the transcript to another school. Mm. But the counselors are kind of bound by that policy as well, and they simply won't send your transcript, you know, because they sign that contract, and they'll say, Serene, sorry, you applied early. You're accepted. You have to go to that school. That's if it's an early decision.
So you've really got to be ready.
You have to be ready. You have to financially know that you can afford it if you get no aid. And secondly, you have to say, I have no regrets, no buyer's remorse. A lot of kids, yeah, so they find out that decision in December. Wow, isn't this exciting? I know that I'm done. Spring rolls around and a lot of their classmates are starting to hear from regular decision. They're getting into some schools and they're thinking, well, I could have gotten into that school if so-and-so did. Mm. And some of that buyer's remorse starts to kick in. So you really want to be certain, because it's typically just one school that you're applying to early, that is a school you want to go
right.
to.
It's like the one school that you've had on your short list.
On your short list. There you go.
Since you were 12.
And it doesn't, yes, since you were 12, but certainly.
Well, Michelina, so, I'm thinking of Michelina Mastriani, right? You know.
Yes.
There's a typical child.
Well, thankfully, she has a school that you and I have talked about that is an early action. So she could have some wiggle room if she needs it. But, you know, if she goes beyond that, if it's an early decision, you'll really want to talk that over as a family, because right. it's not just a kid's decision. You'll have to sign that contract along with her.
I gotcha.
Can we back it up just a little bit before we get to this part of the funnel?
At
the very start,
yes.
What I've never understood is there are how many colleges in the country now?
3,300.
3,300.
Oh, I thought there'd be more.
Yeah, 3,300.
That doesn't seem like a lot. Okay.
Really?
Really?
Seems like a
ton. You think
ton.
It seems like a lot?
I think it's a lot.
And are you saying, are you putting colleges and universities in the same group?
I am, yeah.
And a four-year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Four-year or two-year, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you start that process of going from 3,300 down to 7?
Typically, you know, with our clients, what we do, and I would recommend this whether I was working with someone or not, to say, you know, you can't see 3,300 schools. You can't even, you know, if you wanted, you know, Michelina wants to research 3,300 schools, she might as well forget her schoolwork and any other extra, you know, curricular activity. Right. She's going to be buried into college guidebooks, you know. You can't get through 3,300. So I always say, think about a couple of things. Think about location. Where does the family really want you to go to school? It's always mom and dad want you right next door at the local school, and the child always wants to go to Alaska or Hawaii, okay? That's just the way that it works.
That's where it all starts.
Okay.
Right.
And then you just start to work your way in. And I always say, figure out a geographical area. Figure out a location, as in, do you want a city? Do you want a suburb? Do you want a rural environment? You know, we have a wonderful school right up north of us, Williams. It's very rural. You can go out to, you know, UMass out there in the middle of the state, and you have a suburban feel. You can also just travel south. You can get to Hartford. You can get to New York City, and you'll have a real city environment. Mm. So figure out what you like that way. And then I say, figure out the size. Do you want a big state university or a big university, or do you want a small liberal arts college? Once you start to narrow in on that, that list of 3,300 really starts to work its way down. Yeah.
And okay, and when should you be factoring in how much you can afford? And how would you even know? How would you even know? What can you really afford? What can you not afford?
Right. Well, you know, the problem with the cost today, as we've seen, it's just skyrocketed. The average private school is anywhere between $50,000 to $60,000 a year.
Oh, wow.
Can you
exactly.
imagine?
No,
I think it's a real issue, and I think it's something that we need to address as a country. I mean, we want our young people to be educated. How can we afford this? And so, unfortunately, that's where private education is today. Now, most people will not pay that ticket price. They'll pay
right.
something
they're
off
gonna
of
pay,
that.
They're going to pay something. So, what's the? Because this ticket price is one thing, and I know that my cousin went through this college process 2 years ago, and she said, really. The truth is, no matter where you go, the real budget is like $22,000 anywhere between like 18 to 25,000, averaging 22. Is that right?
That's actually a pretty good number. You can probably look at 18 to 25,000 mm-hmm. is probably what you're looking at.
At a $50,000 a year school.
Out of 50,000. Now,
yeah, that's not like a UMass or whatever.
No, because the beauty of the state schools, that's a public, you know, education mm-hmm. where we've been paying as taxpayers into that. So right. we help fund and allow our students who are residents of that state to go there at a discounted rate. But the thing about a state university like University of Massachusetts, they might not have a lot of money on top of that to give to you. Mm-hmm. Whereas a private institution, especially if they have a large endowment, they might be able to come below that price that you might get right. at the state school. And that's why I say, don't let the price dictate where you apply.
So you don't even think you should even factor that in at the beginning?
Not at the beginning, because what you're doing is you're ruling things out. Mm-hmm. See if you get into the school. Now, I mean, set your expectations, you know, realistically here to say, one, can I even get into that school if I'm a young person applying? Do right. I have the credentials, the academics? And then secondly, as a family, we talk about the cost. What if on the outside chance you are accepted, can we afford this? And mm-hmm. as we go on this price that we say maybe 18 to 25,000, can we afford that a year? And then from there, just understand that you don't have to go to that school unless it's a binding decision. So if you're accepted, right. manage those expectations to say, it might be the case that you're accepted and we might not be able to afford it. And that does happen every year.
And the other side of the coin, if you are a family who can in fact afford any college you want, does that give you an advantage?
It might, absolutely, because what's happening today is on the applications, they have this box that you check that says, will you be applying for financial aid? And if you can say no, for some schools that might work in your favor. A great example of that, a great example is actually University of California. As we all know, California is bankrupt. And so they right now are having a real problem with being able to accept their kids that are in state alone, you know, pay their faculty and everything else that they have.
Because it's free.
It's not free. It feels like it, right? Especially California, because it's so reasonable out there. You can get into a California school in tuition if you're in state, you know, $9,000 to $20,000, you know, I mean, it's pretty crazy. So when you're looking at a school like that, what the University of California is starting to do is they're starting to accept many, many more students from out of state. A great example is Berkeley, UCLA, two of the top schools within that system.
Right.
5 years ago, their out-of-state rate would have been maybe 7%, maybe 6% of students would have come from out-of-state. Today, that number is almost at 20%. Mm. So you can see they're accepting a lot more.
20% full tuition.
Full tuition.
Right.
And that's
because
they're
filling up spots with somebody out of state.
And it's angering a lot of people because they're saying, we've been paying these taxes. Now, when you accept, you know, this international student or this out of state student, you're saying no to my son or daughter.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I'd be irritated about that also. I think that's happening at a bunch of other places too. I think University of Vermont is an example of that.
It's a great example because University of Vermont is about 30% in-state. And in fact, there was a big uproar up there saying, wait a minute, you know, what are we going to do? You can't keep doing this. But what they realized was that when it comes to the University of Vermont, in that particular case, you have a smaller state. And so in that case, I think that you have fewer in-state students.
Yeah, right. All right. If you're just joining us, you are listening to Radio 2 Women. I'm Serene here with Susie Weeks today, and we have Bill Short in the studio. He is talking about the shortlist, college and career counseling. We are specifically focusing, since we're past November 1st and we're in the heat of the application process. Applications need to be in by January 1st. I want to spend the next 5 minutes talking about what students that are preparing applications, like my friend Sienna, what she needs to be putting into that application process. What's the top five things that she needs to be putting into the applications?
She has three things right off the bat that she's going to have to do on most applications, especially if it's a common application. There's a common application that over 450 schools subscribe to. And so one application will satisfy all of those schools. And just about every name brand school you'll find on there. Williams is on there, University of Massachusetts, Smith, Mount Holyoke, Hampshire College. I mean, all of our great schools out in Boston, anything here in the state of Massachusetts. You know, you venture outside of there and you'll find most of the schools there. You have to have a list of activities And this is to say who you are outside the classroom. So what are you, how are you involved? You'll be able to elaborate on one of those on the second element called the short answer essay or the activity essay.
All right, I want to stop you right there on the essay. How important are those essays?
Those essays are important, especially if they're not going to get to meet you. If they won't meet you or have an interview with you, this is your voice. The rest is just numbers. You're looking at an address, a phone number, and then you're looking at academics. So your GPA, so what classes did you take? What did you get as grades in those classes? And then any of your testing, so your SAT, your ACT, maybe subject test. And if you have advanced, you know, placement courses, AP courses in your school or IB courses, you'll have some additional scores. So those are all numbers, but what do they really say about that student? So now is your chance in that essay to really say who you are and to share your story.
And what short story should you be sharing? Is it the sob story? Is it the...
I don't think so. I don't think no, pity is good.
No, some people think that. Some people think that it's, you know, you have to overcome some sort of an obstacle, right? Like some sort of a sob story. Like, you know, my mother died and da-da-da-da. And, you know, I had it, right?
Yes, and a lot of people think that that is the answer.
People think that. I don't know if that's right, but people think that.
I don't think it's right. I think what schools really want to hear is they want to hear where you're excited, where your passion is. It's kind of with that list of activities that I talked about. A lot of students will just, you know, sign up for activities to have something on their resume. Yeah. That's not going to work if you have an interview and you now have to talk about that activity. What I always say instead is that you make sure that you are, you know, passionate about what you're talking about, that you can share that with some sort of enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. The same with your essays, what you're writing about. You know, I actually have a question for you. What do you think the average age of an admissions officer is?
22.
You think it's 22. What do you think,
32.
Susie? 32. You think 32. And if you had to guess, would you go up or down on that?
Up.
You'd go up. You'd go older.
For college?
Oh, I'd
yes.
go up
for
a little.
Prep school, lower.
I'd go up. I think they're young. I think they're young.
They're young. Serene, you're right. And do you know that most students, most high school students, imagine that that person who is reading their application is actually some grumpy old grandpa that's, you know, just ready to retire, sitting in a mahogany office somewhere.
Right.
You know, and it's a male always. It's never a female. Mm. And he's just, you know, wants to find a reason to say no. Mm. And the average age is actually 25.
Really?
It's 25.
And I bet you they're predominantly women, I would think.
A lot of women, but it's a nice mix. It's actually a nice mix. But certainly there are women in there.
And are they sitting as a committee going over these?
They do eventually. In the beginning, what they do is they read them individually. And they typically read them by territory. So you have an admissions officer that covers a particular geography. So they get to meet the kids. They get to understand the schools. They understand the applicants that are applying to that school.
And have they filtered it already? Have they already filtered some out based on their grades?
Right. Do they cut like at an SAT score? Or?
Some schools are pretty much by the line that their average, you know, GPA or their average SAT score. I mean, you can imagine, you know, if you have a 2.5, your chances of an Ivy League school are probably going to be pretty difficult. Mm. You know, but if you have that 3.5 to 4.0, well, maybe your chances are greater. But everybody applying to those schools has a 3.5, 4.0. So that's why you start to look at things outside of those grades. A lot of the schools are holistic. So when you talk about scores, SAT, ACT, you know, subject test scores, a lot of schools have become test optional. You know, right here in our state, we have, I was talking about Hampshire College, Mount Holyoke, Smith. Those are test optional schools. Mm. If you're just not a great test taker, I'm not a great test taker. You know, I love, you know, the schools that I went to, how I got to those schools. Sometimes I question because I see the world as gray. It's not black and white. You give me five responses and I will tell you why all five of those could be right.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's tough for some students. And they say, we'd rather look at those students over 4 years. Mm. How have you been as a student over four versus on a Saturday morning at 8 o'clock on one particular day?
What about improvement? You know, like, let's just say, and this happens a lot, some kids start ninth grade and it's harder than they thought. I mean, especially here where you have, well, used to anyway, we had regionalized schools, right? So you had six or seven schools kind of feeding into the main high school. All of them were at different levels. All of them had different curriculum mapping and all that stuff. And, you know, there were some kids that we used to say, you know, the Housatonic kids always were poor performers in high school at ninth grade. But then, you know, let's say some of those kids improved. Is that important?
It is important, and it's especially important, period. They want to see an upward trend. So they want to see that your grades are climbing because they want to see who are you as a student today. And that's why junior year, your grades junior year are the most important because you have a full year. It's the last full year of grades. If you're applying, we've been talking earlier today about the fact that everybody's applying for January, regular decision, January 1, you'll have a semester of grades. That's it, at most, that mid-year report, that first semester senior year. So the last full year is that junior year. They want to see an upward trend because that's who they believe they're accepting. That's the student who's coming in. They see the downward trend. They're like, where's the maturity level? How serious is a student about school?
So don't cut yourself out if you had a bad freshman half of sophomore year.
Not at all. Now, of course, the most competitive schools, it's going to be more difficult. I mean, when you're talking about the top schools in the country, if you're talking about a Harvard or a Stanford, you know, by saying...
Or even Williams. I heard Williams is impossible to get
absolutely
into.
It is. Yeah. It's a tough school along with Amherst. Yeah. Those are tough schools. And for them to accept you, so you had a bad freshman year, but you really picked up sophomore, junior, you know, even senior year. If they accept you, they're saying, okay, Serene, we'll accept you. We see that you turned your act around or you finally caught on or you had some difficulty freshman year. Fine. And Susie, I understand that for 4 years, you've really been nailing it every single year and you did a great job. But unfortunately, we're going to give it to Serene because she learned her lesson now here in senior year, even though you learned it freshman year. And so the question is, when they accept one who's learning that lesson, what are they saying to the one that learned it a long time ago?
Right.
And the most elite, most selective schools in the country, that's going to be a tougher argument. But for other schools where they have some flexibility, they love that story that you turned it around. Absolutely.
Is that something you should put in the essay?
There are places that you can put that in. There's a spot where you can put down, is there any additional information we should know about your education? And in there, you can talk about, you know, a move. You can talk about a family divorce, a death in the family, an illness that you might have had, anything that might have caused your grades to dip. I also say that what students shouldn't do, if you're not a good test taker, don't come up with every excuse as to why you're not a good test taker. Have your counselor do it for you. Have your teacher explain that. It's a lot stronger if an application comes in where the counselor says, what you're not going to know about Serene is that she is an amazing student. We've never had anybody work harder than her. She's the first one to get her homework in, always ask her teachers, you know, questions if she doesn't understand. She's more diligent than anybody that we've seen come through this school. You're also going to know she's not a great test taker, has never been. But if you look at her grades, that's who you're accepting. She'll never be able to probably do that single day test, but she'll always be the one that'll work hard in school. Coming from the teacher, the counselor saying that versus the student saying, oh, and by the way, I didn't do very well on my test because it sounds like an excuse.
Right.
So talk to your teacher, your counselor, and have them tell that story.
It's a great tip. If you're just joining us, you are listening to Radio to Women. I'm Serene here with Susie Weeks, and we have Bill Short in the studio talking about the Shortlist College and Career Counseling. Get more information on Bill at his website, theshortlist.org. You have a question,
yeah,
Susie?
Yeah, Bill, how about the kids who are not extraordinary students, the ones who didn't catch on sophomore or junior year,
right,
but have struggled through school? Are kind of average kids. I would think they're very difficult to place. And I mean, how do you help them package themselves?
There's a couple things that you want to think about with those students. The first question that you always want to ask is, are they ready for college? There are some students that simply aren't students. They're not academic, and there might be another route for them. And it could be a four-year school. It could be a school that is much more experiential in your learning. So that a great university out in Boston called Northeastern, they have a co-op program. For two or three of your years that you're in school, you actually get to work in a company doing real work. And it's not, I'm not talking about that you're stapling, you know,
you're not
pieces.
A manufacturing line.
You're not a manufacturing line. You're actually given a project because you have to write about it and you have to have your professor look at it. And, and your professor works very closely with that company that you're working at. And many of them actually get hired out of those jobs. They might be more appropriate for that.
Is that a different is that a different application process?
Not at all, because
Northeastern. So you're applying to Northeastern.
Yes, Northeastern, another school that's like that is Drexel down in Philadelphia. Mm. You're applying, and those are great schools, and they're not just known for the co-op. They are known for their co-op. That's something that's very, very popular about those schools. But they are a university like any other. There's nothing special about them. They are a great top university.
So you're going to class and working, or you're...
Yeah, you would go to class, the things that you're learning in class, and you would be able to apply in a job. And so they have a wonderful co-op department that'll help place you into jobs. It's not a vocational school. You're actually doing that separate. So,
but at the same time.
You could be doing it at the same time. You could also be doing it for a semester where you're out of school. And then in that case, it might take you 5 years to get through college as opposed to four.
I'm thinking that that's going to take a very highly motivated, mature student. I think what Susie is referring to is, you know, the kids that just are just really struggling. They're just continuing to struggle. You know, what do you do? What do you do then?
Well, once you find out if they're truly ready for school, and some might not be ready or ever ready, maybe it's just that they need to take a year off, consider some alternatives. We have some amazing, amazing, amazing community colleges where it doesn't cost you a fortune. They can live at home. They can take some classes to see if there's something that, you know, generates some interest in them, something they want to pursue at a four-year, and then from there transfer to a four-year that's more costly. They could also look at, as I said, vocational schools. But there are also students who are motivated. They just simply aren't top students. They never will be. You know, they will go ahead and probably always have B's or C's or D's. It's just that's the kind of student. But it doesn't mean that they don't work hard to get those grades. There are, as I said, Susie, 3,300 schools in this country. Believe me, there are schools that you can find for them. But as a family, you just have to say, if we have a 2.5 student, we can't be talking about Harvard or Princeton or Yale.
Is that where you think people make their mistakes?
Absolutely. This
see
country,
that a lot?
Absolutely. It's the problem with this process is rankings have factored into this. And the rankings that, you know, U.S. News and World Report has gone under. The only thing that still exists is that they still publish an annual ranking.
Right.
Okay. That alone keeps that magazine alive. That magazine is gone. You cannot buy U.S. News and World Report in the newsstand anymore. Mm-hmm. Except once a year, you can buy this ranking. And now they've created other rankings too. So they've become a company of rankings. And they have to change it up a little bit because if it's the same schools at the top every single year, well, just use the same, you know, magazine that you bought 10 years ago.
And you think that people get married to this?
I think that they do. Yeah. And I think not only do they get married to it, but I think they get married to the idea of a bumper sticker. Mm. Where did my son or daughter
Oh, yeah.
Get
I mean, we all, I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, who doesn't want to drive around? My husband, you know, my niece goes to Columbia. My husband goes to the farmer's market with the Columbia baseball cap on. I love that. I'm married to Columbia myself. Michelina's married to Georgetown because when you open up everything, right? Georgetown. And the media has gotten involved in this process too.
Absolutely.
I mean, college road trip is why, you want to know honestly why Michelina loves Georgetown? College road trip.
The movie.
I'm not even kidding. It was a great way to get her kind of thinking about colleges. And then, of course, we made the mistake of going and visiting the campus, which, I mean, who
wouldn't love that? And tell me that you went and had some dinner or lunch in the town of Georgetown as well. And, you know, pretty soon you're seeing all the monuments down there. You're out on the mall. It's a beautiful day.
And you think you're raising the next president.
Yes.
Yeah, my son at age six picked University of Vermont. And we went to a fundraiser for University of Vermont. And he took it upon himself to march up to the front of this theater and introduce himself to the president of the University of Vermont and say, I am going to go here. At the age of six. He didn't end up going there, but he ended up going to Green Mountain. So it was close.
Close. Okay. You know, but sometimes you know that. And that's the beauty of this process. There are some students that absolutely know it right away. And then there are others that struggle along the way. And in those cases, you really just want to take the time to say, how do we guide them? How do we help them? And sometimes they're not academic and we find schools for them. Or sometimes...
Let me ask you a very specific question. Mm-hmm. I have a friend, a young friend, who dropped out of high school her junior year. It was actually, I think, her second semester of her junior year. And she is now finishing up adult education, which will give her a diploma. And she finishes up in December. and says that she is going to community college in January. She hasn't done anything about an application yet. Is this a realistic?
Is it dead for her?
It's not. She's actually okay with that. Many community colleges, as long as you have a diploma, high school diploma, you can go in and register.
Really?
It's not necessarily a selective process. And so you'd have to just see which community college and where that eventually will lead her. But yeah, she's right. She could probably start in January as long as she has that diploma.
That's great for her. I'm very happy to hear that.
Yeah,
that's good.
Where does she live?
Connecticut.
In Connecticut.
Norwich.
Yeah, lots of great community colleges down there.
So Three Rivers she's looking at.
What I like about that decision, too, and I think it's a lesson for all of us. Here's somebody who said at one point, I don't know that school's for me, dropped out. Came to it a little bit later and said, you know, I do want to get a degree, a high school degree. Went on her own. That's a real self-motivated girl. And then now is saying, I'm going to go to community college and say, let me see if there's another step. When that young lady goes to apply for colleges for the 4 year after 2 years, if she does well in those 2 years, that story alone will carry her a long way.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bill.
Absolutely.
Great to hear. So I want to talk a little bit about improving your chances, because there are other things that I learned in the last show, and I really want to talk a little bit more about them, because we all think as parents in our 40s that it's the well-rounded student. If I go back to Sienna again as an example, she's a great dancer. I mean, she dances more beautifully than anyone I think I've even ever seen professionally. But she kind of challenged herself and said, oh, I'm going to do track. I really need to be well-rounded. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get into college. I don't want to go to college for dance. So you were saying in the last show that the all-around, well-rounded student doesn't necessarily get you further.
That's right. What I had said the last show was that it used to be, when we were all applying to school, that we were looking for that well-rounded student, that student who was involved in everything. And what we realized that we were accepting all these kids to our campus who had a little of a lot, but not a lot of really anything. And so we found people that just could kind of touch on particular activities. What your friend is doing there is that she's a great dancer. I would tell her to highlight in her essays and in her activities the dance components. If she's done things outside of a particular studio, has she done things in the summer? Is she now a dance captain? Has she choreographed? Is she in the school musical? Mm. Highlight those things as a separate dance section.
Yeah.
And then have those other activities. Even if she's not thinking to dance in college, she may not be thinking about professionally pursuing it as a degree. But I would bet that she's going to want to dance at that school. And what the schools are looking for, what they're looking for that we forget is they're saying, okay, so you have the academic credentials to be here. All of these students that we're looking at have this credentials. And how do we, now that we've whittled it down to this list, how do we still reduce it further? What we say is, okay, who are you going to be once you get here?
Mm.
Well, you know what? She's going to be our dancer. She's going to get involved in the school musical and the dance productions. Okay, we have our dancer. Do we have somebody who's going to be in the orchestra? Do we have somebody who's going to be student government? How about that yearbook? And they start to look for those things that will start to create some depth in those programs on those campuses.
Right. That's great advice right there. Depth.
Yep. It is depth.
Stick to few activities and do them well.
Absolutely. Stick to fewer activities.
Right.
Fewer you know, there are some, I have some students who just love being involved, and they'll always be involved. It's just who they are. But absolutely, go to fewer activities and build some depth there.
Because you were saying at the last, I mean, Williams might be looking for an editor. They may be looking for a yearbook editor. And that may be your way to get in if you missed, you know, I don't know. Williams is a hard choice.
But
right?
They might be looking for an editor. And if you have the credentials, that might be it. But, you know, I think that too often what we do is we look for how do I get in rather than is this the right school? If you've identified Williams as absolutely the right school for you, and you can really articulate that in an interview, in your essays, in any other form of communication with that school. And now let me tell you who you're going to get if you accept me.
Yeah.
So not only are you perfect for me, but I'm going to tell you why I'm perfect for you.
Right.
But if it's just that bumper sticker that we were talking about before, and I'm going to try to game this process and try to join every activity or try to really build depth on a particular activity, and now, you know, that top school will look for me. Well, is that school right for you? Mm. That's the question.
Do you believe that, Bill? Do you believe that this school ends up really, really do a good job of picking what's right for the student.
Yes.
Putting the right student in the right place.
I do, because, and this is hard to accept, but schools are not looking for reasons to deny you. They're looking for reasons to accept you. They want to find that reason. Why is Serene right? Why do we want to accept her? Because they don't want you to leave after freshman year, to transfer, to go somewhere else.
Because they've lost their investment.
Because they've lost their investment, but it also selfishly factors into the rankings, which is one thing. But it doesn't bode well for the morale on the campus. So they want kids that want to be there. You know, a school that turned that around was Penn. Penn is an Ivy League school. Who wouldn't want to go to Penn? But Penn at the time was not at the top of the Ivy League list. What they decided to do was they said, let's figure out why we're not. And they realized that the kids that they had on their campus were kids who were there almost begrudgingly because they'd been denied by another Ivy League school. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, no. That's not what we want. We want a student who chooses us first. So they did that when we were talking at the top of the show, the early decision.
Right.
They instituted early decision, and they accept, I think it's 60% of their class through early decision. Kids who can say, you're my number one school, and if you accept me, I'll go there, because they know those aren't kids that want to transfer.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Penn then just climb the rankings.
Do you recommend that kids do that, that they, out of the seven schools that they're applying to, that they rank them about this is my first choice, this is my fallback?
Yes, I always say that there are reach targets, probables. Reach means that it's a reach, you know, for me to get in. I either don't have the credentials or, you know, I don't have quite what they're looking for, but maybe.
And should that be their first choice?
Not necessarily. I have a student, a great example, who got into a fairly popular reach school, but also got into a target school. But that target school offered him the Honors College. They also offered him a scholarship that he wouldn't have gotten at that other top school. And he saw a program there that made absolute sense for him. Mm. And so, much to the surprise of his parents, he actually turned down that very, very well-known school to go to this target school, and is just excelling beyond words.
And if he had done early decision, he wouldn't have had that choice.
He wouldn't have had that choice, especially if he would have allowed those around him to influence him.
Right, he wouldn't have seen what another school can give you.
That's
correct. Right, because you're kind of pulled out of the pool at that point.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. All right, I want to talk a little bit about finding meaningful community service or summer work and how important that is. This is not for kids that are applying now in January, but I'm talking about now, you know, now I'm talking about the little Michelinas in the world that are going to be coming into high school soon.
There are lots of ways.
It goes fast.
It does go fast.
What grade is Michelina in?
She's in eighth. She's seventh grade.
Oh, my God. Yeah, right. Panic. You only have 2 years until high school. Get going.
Well, you know what, Serene? What I like about that question is the community service. She should be thinking about that, you know, in light of just life itself. You know, giving back.
Thank you, Bill. Yes.
And you know that with all of your work.
I agree with you, Bill.
You know, I have to say, a personal experience this weekend. I was down in New York, and of course, the hurricane came through, and it devastated the area. And one of the big questions there was, do we or do we not run this marathon? Well, I was registered for it. I was one of those runners for Sunday's marathon, and they held it out till Friday, and they canceled it. And that was the right decision. That was absolutely the right decision. But it left many of us kind of questioning, what do? We just trained for 4 months or more for this marathon.
And we're here in New York.
And we're here in New York. And you know, friends would say, oh, my gosh, you must be crushed. And I said, no, I'm lucky. I have a roof over my head. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, food on the table. You know, my lights flickered or went out for a couple of days. But, you know, I'm okay here. And so what was beautiful about that experience was, on Sunday, they organized kind of a runner-organized marathon in the park, which many people ran. I did myself. And then we all went and did community service.
It was fantastic. It was the best turnaround ever.
It was the best turnaround. But, you know, it was really driven by the runners. And I think there's something about when you're doing something that you're passionate about, when you go out there every day doing something, running, you have no problem saying, I can help somebody else. Right. Because it's almost in your blood. And I think that introducing Michelina to some community service, even as a family, how about Thanksgiving, Serene? You two go to a place that packs up meals, that delivers them to those less fortunate.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we're very community service.
I could recommend a place you could do some.
No, we're very community service minded. Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I know you could recommend a place. and Susie will have my whole family over at Construct, I'm sure, packing up.
That's right.
But no, I mean, I think my point about this is that the... there seems to be, for parents like myself, there seems to be a whole new market of your kid goes here for the... My daughter did people-to-people last summer. I went to Europe. Well, that's how they get into college. That's what colleges are looking for, people-to-people.
Yes.
Well, you know, people-to-people is expensive. And, you know, it was funny because out of the 14 kids that went... 12 of them were only children. Well, that's because if you had four kids, you can't send one of them, you know, to Europe for 2 weeks. So there seems to be this market. And I noticed now that she's done that, there's another thing that, you know, which is community service at Yale for 2 weeks, where you are, it looks like, you know, providing childcare for some summer students that have kids, and you know what I mean? And you go and you live there, and we pay for, you know, I'm paying for that too, because my kid's going to live. So there seems to be this whole new market of, how important, you know, is that real? Is it real?
You know, some of it is. Some of it can be great. We have somebody on staff whose her sole job is that she handles summer activities. And whether they're, you know, these, as you say, community service oriented programs or academic programs or summer camps or what have you. I mean, certainly there are things that we're always looking to do for our kids. And our kids are telling us what they also want to do. But when it comes to the real question of community service, I have a lot of students who will say to me, literally, I don't do community service. I don't work in homeless shelters or soup kitchens or, you know, do canned drives or a whole different question there, right? To question why perhaps they don't. But rather than question that, why don't you say, well, what would you like to do? Most kids have a passion. You mentioned your friend who's the dancer. There are programs that you can do for dance that are helping, you know, those less fortunate maybe with dance. And taking something that you love and creating a community service out of that, that is a stronger community service. Because now you're taking what you love and extending that beyond you to someone else.
Right. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Radio 2 Women. I'm Serene here with Susie Weeks, and we have Bill Short in the studio talking about his company, The Shortlist. That is theshortlist.org. And it's college and career counseling. All right. One other tip that I learned last time and I want to share with our listeners again is the repeat habitual SAT, ACT takers. And I read somewhere on your website that, you know, when we, again, if you took the SATs 20 times, you submitted your highest score. And that's not the case anymore. So these parents that are pushing these kids to retake, what do you say to them?
Well, you have to question why are they retaking it? You know, what is the real reason? And some of them, it might be that they really do need to retake it. And for others, we have to just say, look, let's cut our losses. You know, this is not going to be the thing getting you into school. There is an obsession with these tests. Now, schools all react differently to this. Some schools will do what they call school score. You can send in multiple days and they'll take the highest individual score from each section, combine them together to create what they call a super score. There are other schools that will ask you to send all of your scores. They don't tell you what they're going to do with them. And they're really looking to say, you know, maybe they average them. Maybe they do super score. Maybe they just want to see, are you, as you point out, just somebody who's this student who's obsessed with the SAT and trying to improve it. Many schools, you mentioned Georgetown is a great example of this. Penn is another example of this, where they say, it's really a disadvantage for those that can't afford to take this test. $41 to take this test. You know, to take that 5-6 times for some families, the money that represents, right, that's a real hardship. And so do you put that student at a disadvantage over somebody whose family can afford the coach, can afford the classes, can afford taking it
the
10 times?
The prep class, yeah.
Now, I'm always one that says, prep for the SAT. It's a strategy test. there are tips that you can learn. There are rules. It's not, it is, you know, knowledge-based, but it's also, it's a strategy. It's a reasoning test. So there are things that you can learn. There are free programs out there, and there are costly programs. I'm not going to advocate for one or the other, but I would say prep. Mm-hmm. But to keep taking that test, no. There are other things you could be doing. Go do some community service.
When do they start taking the prep courses for the SATs?
When do you take your SATs? That's a good question, too.
There are some families that will start it very, very young. I always say the test is designed for somebody who's had 3 years of high school. So you should take it in spring of junior year. That's your third year of high school. Some will take it sooner, depending upon, you know, their courses that they're taking. There is a thing called the SAT subject test, which is separate from the SAT. It highlights particular subjects where you might have a strength. I would always take those when you're finishing up that course. If you're taking biology sophomore year, you're finishing that up in June, and you do really well in that course, why not take the subject test at the end of the year to coincide with the end of that course?
But how about the prep? Getting
And the prep, I would say, yes. I would wait. My own personal take is that there's a burnout factor. I mean, we have enough trying to get our kids kind of engaged in the process to say, you know, don't overdo it. The summer before junior year, okay. But I always say, wait for that PSAT. Get them through October of junior year. They all take that PSAT on one of 2 days. It's a Wednesday or a Saturday. And then once they've taken that PSAT, they'll get their score back. But they'll have had a practice, and they'll know what it feels like. Start your prepping then, and then maybe you start taking those tests in January or March of that following spring.
Okay.
All right, if you're just joining us, you are listening to Radio 2 Women. We are almost out of time, but we do have Bill Short here. Oh, the Short List, theshortlist.org is where you can find information on him. What couple other tips that kids and parents can do to prep their kids for this process is, you say, get to know your school counselor and establish teacher relationship. How many teacher relationships do you recommend, and what does that mean?
I would start that in junior year, because it's your last full year of school, and most schools will ask you for anywhere from 1 to 2 recommendations. Those teachers know you from beginning to end. I would start to establish that relationship by going up to the teacher that you like, you enjoy the course, asking them questions, allowing them to get to know you a little bit personally, getting recommendations from them for maybe if we were talking about summer programs, do they know of some summer programs, reading lists, maybe if you enjoy that course, things that they could do outside of that, but just getting kind of a personal connection with them.
And then, these are current recommendations.
These are current recommendations, and I would do that in junior year. And at the end of junior year, I would probably approach those two teachers and say, would you be willing to write a letter of recommendation for me?
Is it a little suspicious if all of a sudden junior year kids have become involved in activities, or they've suddenly become interested in community service?
I mean, it's not as suspicious as it is senior year. Junior year, we understand that there are some students that just come late to the game. And so as long as they're showing what they're doing with that and continuing it into senior year, absolutely. But when they're doing it senior year, and we get a lot of those joiners senior year that suddenly, you have to put on your application, by the way, what year you participated, 9, 10, 11, 12, or any combination of that. Mm. And when admissions officers see somebody who has 8 great activities all with a 12 on them only, we know that that was somebody who joined simply for the application.
Right.
So look, if somebody hasn't joined anything before junior year, still, I mean, you want a college experience. I would encourage any kid, whether college or not, join, get involved, you know, make friends, join clubs, join activities.
And a great way to get to know the teachers.
And
as
a great
well,
way to right? get to
or
know
for the teachers to get to know you.
Especially if it's something that either they're the faculty sponsor of, or if you're in a show and mm-hmm. you're telling your teacher, hey, and by the way, Miss Smith, I'm going to be in a show, you know, the school musical this weekend. I sure hope you can make it. I mean, there's a connection there. I have a student. I volunteer down at a high school in New York City. We were talking about that on the last show.
Right.
I started in September for 2 months. It's now been 10 years. I'm the college counselor at this school, you know. These kids have a hold of me, right? So,
well, this is a school where the girl went homeless to Harvard.
From homeless to Harvard. That's right.
Oh.
You remembered. That's right.
Yeah.
She went homeless to Harvard.
This isn't just any school.
But, you know, focus on
this is a tough Tough demographic school, right?
It is a tough demographic school. We go through metal detectors to get into that school. And, you know, it's many truants that have had difficulty in other schools. But I have a student there who I've gotten to know very well this year. And she came up to me at the end of our last session. She said, oh, you know, I hope you don't mind, but I wanted to show you something. And I said, sure, Danae, what is it? And she said, I'm going to be in a show. And she handed me her flyer. And she said, I know you're really busy, but if you think you could make it, I'd love for you to come see us, you know, see us perform. I was like, are you kidding? I will drop everything to come see you just because I could see how important it was for her.
Right. You know, my nephew was just in Lord of the Flies up at Barrington Stage.
Yeah.
And I picked him. I had to pick him up one night because my sister and brother-in-law were out of town. And there were these two people standing outside and they're talking. They're very excited. And I'm standing there not paying attention to them. And one of the other stars came out and said, are you waiting for somebody? And they said, yeah, we're waiting for Joey Labrasca. And when Joey came out and saw two of his teachers standing there, he's a freshman at Monument.
Wow.
He was just blown away. Sure. He felt like
special.
Really special. It was so important to him.
Yeah. I think that teachers have a great power within them.
There's
really
the ability of a teacher, yeah. I mean, to, you know, to have an influence over a student. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many of our students will come to me and say, you know, I'm really interested in this school because my teacher recommended the school.
Yeah, I agree. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time again, Bill. We're falling short.
The first man to come three times on the show.
Falling short on the short list. If you want to get more information about Bill, you can visit him on his website, which is theshortlist.org. He's also here in Great Barrington. What's the phone number?
Yeah, it's 413-528-528. 5478. 5478 is list, the short list. So that's how you get it.
Oh, the list. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming
back
to Radio
Women. Thank you so much. I loved it.
It was terrific.
I have to say, I think we might have to have you back.
I would love to come back.
I mean, we never have men in the studio, but we are making an exception for you. Thank you for sharing some of your pearls. If you want to get more information, please visit his website, The Short List. And I'm going to give you kudos because I think that we are in a very competitive time. And you seem to really be able to help families.